Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. Thank you for joining us today. Before I introduce my guest, I want to share what's happening here at Responsive Fundraising. In January, we will be introducing not one, not two, not three. We will be introducing four new members of Responsive's consulting practice. Whereas I will continue to serve a select few clients, my time will become more focused on strengthening the brand, identifying new opportunities, and developing the Responsive theory. These individuals will take the lead with Responsive's growing national network of clients. As you will soon discover, we believe these four individuals have exactly what it takes to take our practice to a whole new level. Each of these individuals believes in the vision of Responsive Fundraising. They have a desire to redefine what it means to partner with charitable organizations, and they want to be a part of creating organizations where fundraising can thrive. We're not quite ready to let the cat out of the bag as to who these four individuals are. However, I can assure you that no one is more eager and excited than me to introduce you to all of our new team members. Hi, Kelly. Thank you for being my guest today again on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. You and I met a couple of months ago at the RAISE conference in Chicago. Very graciously agreed to sit down with me and tell me about that particular event. I understand it went really well. Before we jump into our topic, why don't you give me sort of an update on how great that event really was?
It was awesome. I mean, I think to have, you know, as we talked about on the last podcast, the whole reason for RAISE is to create this new interactive conference experience for fundraisers and nonprofits, and to see, you know, 400 plus fundraisers from across the country, you know, working hands-on in sessions, talking to each other, brainstorming, doing group work. It was awesome.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciated you finding some time right at the beginning of that event to get to know me a little bit. And we bantered around a few things. We decided we'd enjoy working together. And so we've been talking about ways to collaborate ever since then. So you guys have this report that came out that hit my radar, I don't know, about 2 weeks ago. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. For our listeners who are not familiar with this report, you just want to kind of summarize it for us and tell us a little bit about it. And then we'll go back and forth for a while.
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to take back in time a little bit. So last year in 2018, we released Social Donor Study, which was a look at how our donors in this new era of fundraising, with all the social connections, social media and technology, you know, what makes them tick. Then we decided with this particular study, we wanted to continue this social fundraising trend, but we really wanted to look at it through the eyes of participants, those that in, you know, peer-based fundraising and campaigns, those that you're asking to do the fundraising for you, the ones that are out there soliciting their networks. So we partnered with Edge Research. We went out in the field in July. And as you said, we just released findings, so they're super fresh. In the end of October, we talked to 1,100 peer-to-peer or social fundraisers, participants, one actively fundraising, and then asked them what were their motivators, what makes them tick, what are their challenges, what are the barriers to their fundraising, to really create a psychographic roadmap for nonprofits to be able to understand, how can I leverage my participants? How can I create the best experience for them so that they'll be successful? And I think what's really interesting about this research, now there's a ton of research out there, you know, on peer-to-peer, social fundraising, social networks, but most of that research is transactional, meaning that you're looking at data from a system or data and then analyzing what are the trends within this. This is the first of its kind that really asks the participants themselves, from their perspective, what are their motivators? So it's a direct, almost like a direct line into the mindset of what makes today's social fundraisers successful.
Yeah, so let's make sure we clarify that, because there's a lot of people that I talk to a lot of people who use the word peer-to-peer, and you're referring to social fundraisers. So are these people actually on the payroll? Are these the volunteers that are working with your organization, or is there somebody in between that we're talking about?
I think that's a great question, and so super important to clarify. These are not on the payroll. Okay. They are not nonprofit employees. Okay. These are your most loyal supporters, whether that's your board members, your donors, they could even be employees, they can be corporate teams, but these are people who are doing, and to clarify this, either traditionally we looked at, we looked at five segments of social fundraisers, those doing what had been traditionally run, walk, rides or on the ground events, those doing event-based social fundraising for you, occasions, those are, your birthdays and your memorial tributes, crowdfundings, and then challenges, your ice bucket challenges or other virtual kind of challenge events.
Right. Okay. So I think that's really helpful, because that's kind of the as I was reading through this over the weekend, that's kind of the impression that I got, that we were talking about the volunteers who we as paid fundraising professionals might be enlisting. And I was thinking, okay, how are we thinking critically about what their experience looks like? Which kind of offers a different, an additional point of clarification. We're talking about the fundraising experience on the fundraising side of the volunteer,
correct,
right? We're not talking
correct.
About, it's a whole different, which makes this particularly unique. If you think about this for a minute, Kelly, and I'm sure you already have, we're not talking about the fundraiser's experience, like the paid fundraiser. And we're not really talking about the donor's experience, but we're talking about the experience of those that we enlist to voluntarily raise money for us. Am I right?
Absolutely. And then you think about this as like, if you do, whether you do peer-to-peer fundraising, you do social fundraising, and by definition, I mean, you are engaging individuals on the behalf of your cause to go and activate their social networks to raise money for you. So if you're doing that, those individuals are the backbone of your success. You have to make them successful, because they're the ones doing the active fundraising for you. So that was really the motivation behind this research, was to give nonprofits a roadmap. If I'm going to do social fundraising, if I'm going to do peer-to-peer, how can I construct my campaigns? How do I construct that experience to make the ones actually fundraising for me successful?
Yeah, so I think when I was looking at your key findings yesterday, one of the things that really jumped out at me was this notion of team-based fundraising increases success and retention. So when if we're talking about this volunteer who's doing peer-to-peer fundraising, are we talking about them recruiting a team for them, or are we talking about having already recruited the team and us making those connections amongst our volunteers?
I mean, I think it can be both.
Okay.
In the sense of the loyal supporters, the participants, they may decide they want to set up a team, and they might want to invite their social networks to join their team and fundraise on your behalf. You see this a lot in the traditional run, walk, ride events. You're starting to see it a lot in the virtual campaigns as well. But the idea is, you don't need to fundraise solo, and you don't need to fundraise alone if you can activate your networks to not just give, but take that next step to become active fundraisers themselves. It's a recipe for success for nonprofits.
Yeah, so I don't like the key finding, difficulty asking for money is, I don't think that's not terribly new to most of us in fundraising. But what else on this list, for example, sort of jumped out at you when you're looking at this and thinking, okay, wow, that's a big indicator we need to be talking about with our clients and so forth?
I think for me, I think for a lot of it, there's a lot of things on here. It's like you could spend days unpacking the data and really mapping it back to your fundraising. But I think that the thing that stands out to me is that the participant experience is so critically important. And what I mean by that, or what we mean by that, and what the data tells us is that it's one thing to just ask for people to fundraise on your behalf. It's another thing to create an experience as they're fundraising for you that is easy. And then here's the next thing that connects them to your mission, and that is fun. And fun element continues to play itself out throughout the findings in the study. I mean, it is fun fundraising, right? And what these participants are telling us, there has to be a level of enjoyment. And it doesn't matter if they hit their goals or not, but enjoyment has to be at the center of it. And so I think what's fascinating is that, when you think about what we do in real life, and those activities by which we engage in our, you know, normal personas, it's no different for fundraisers. It's no different for participants, and, you know, not that very different for donors, is that you want to do things where you gain a sense of satisfaction and enjoyment. So that connection to the mission, that nonprofits sharing the impact, nonprofits making it fun.
Yeah.
It's first and foremost in examining our fundraising and saying, is it fun? Are we creating enjoyable moments for our participants? What does that process look like? I think that's something we get focused on the process of executing, and we forget what is the process of the experience.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here thinking about this. I'm looking at one of these table on page 6 of your report, and I'm kind of fascinated with the notion of, let's ask ourselves for a moment, Kelly, how do we find out when we're talking to a group of volunteer social fundraisers, which of these categories here is particularly necessary, most fun for them? Does that
well,
make
I'm
sense?
Always a believer. Yeah.
Do you understand the question I'm asking?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, if I'm a fundraiser, meaning I'm a nonprofit, let's use that term here, nonprofit.
Yeah.
If I'm a nonprofit, I think I'm always asked my donors.
Yeah.
I would go to them and say, you know, I'm thinking about getting into peer-to-peer social fundraising, or we're already doing it and we have this report and we kind of want to benchmark ourselves. You know, where do you participate? Where do you find enjoyment? What are the kinds of activities that you like to actively fundraise for? And ask them yourselves. The report contains actually the questions that we ask. Nonprofits could use those in similar fashion to ask their own base, but that's where I would start.
Yeah, because I mean, I think about just speaking for myself. I'm an achievement-driven guy, so I think a challenge, one of these I see these challenges going up everywhere. Of these five things, I would tend to think that being a part of or helping orchestrate or, you know, be a challenge would probably be the more fun for me. I think on the run, walk, ride side, I think I've been a part of those for 25 years, and they're getting a little dated, you know what I mean? So how do you – you've got boomer – you've got sort of generational information at the back end of this. Did we find that different categories found it more fun or found it more of an enjoyable experience?
What we found is that regardless if you were, you know, Gen Z, millennial, boomer, all the way through, enjoyment needed to be a factor in order to keep you motivated.
Yeah. Yeah. So that report, you and I were talking about that table, mm-hmm. folks, you're going to have to, for my listeners, we're going to make sure to put this report on my show notes. So you're going to have to go and get this, because I know that we can't visualize it for you, but you've got this, Kelly, you got this fascinating model here at the very back. I think it's on page 20. You and I are talking about the 28 or something, but it's sort of this visualization of what baby boomers versus the millennials versus everybody in between and before would sort of most enjoy. Talk to me about that for a few minutes.
Yeah. So for those of you that are going to pick up the study and you'll have access to it, Jason talking about page 18, and we break down
page
literally
18,
a section
yeah.
of, yeah, what motivates social fundraisers. And we ask them, you know, what are the aspects that motivate your fundraising success? And interestingly enough, then we broke it down further into the generationals, Gen Z, millennial, Gen X, boomers. And I'm just going to pick out a couple things, which I think is fascinating. So boomers, right? And boomers are still, everybody talks about the new millennials, this new age of fundraising. Boomers are still part of our core. And boomers say number one is being part of a team.
Yeah, I see that.
Number two is seeing progress. Then they talk about leaderboards and email notification and text notifications.
Yeah.
Now let's flip to the other end of the spectrum, Gen Z. And Gen Z is saying, I need to be able to see progress.
Uh-huh.
First and foremost, I need to have activities that generate buzz and contests and badges and milestones and activity-based rewards. And generationally, what stands out there is, you know, boomers want to be a part of a team
and
based on this data. Gen Z is, you know, hey, I want to go it alone, but keep me updated on this progress.
Yeah.
Let me engage with this campaign. And this is where technology comes in. But even the boomers are saying leaderboards, email notifications, text notifications. And so there's this this idea that you have to gamify and you have to automate your communications, whether you're talking to your boomers or your Gen Zs, in a way that keeps them updated of their progress. I mean, you think about, you know, Orange Theory and some of these other things we do in our real life, all the fitness apps out there, that's what they're doing. So how are we doing that in our fundraising? And I think millennials and Gen Xs, they're interesting as well. Some of the same motivators, like millennials, they want to see their progress. They want leaderboards. They also want to be part of a team. Yeah. You know, Gen X, again, like boomers, part of a team is top of the list. Then come the notifications and the progress and the leaderboards, et cetera. So there's throughout this undercurrent that you have to look at your technology or your systems and make sure that you're finding ways to connect with those donors regularly or those participants regularly, and finding ways to keep them engaged so that they're coming back to your campaign.
Yeah. So do you think we can, so I think there's a very, I'm making the same observation you are about this very, this interesting continuum of expectations between the sort of the youngest generation that you've got represented here and the older generation you've got represented here. And I do see the boomers who are sort of grasping for sort of a meaningful engagement with their peers, whereas the Gen Z donor that you're talking or social fundraiser that you're talking about here probably is already feeling like they're as engaged as they need to be with their peers. And they just have some expectations of you to, maybe virtually help them make sure they're doing it really well. So, it's sort of an interesting contrast of what the expectations might be. And I have to imagine now you and I haven't talked about the platforms that you folks, provide at One Cause, but, I have to imagine you have some way of customizing the experience for that boomer or that Gen Z in order to sort of align with that. Is there something that you're doing in your platform that lets us sort of take all this into consideration?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we build a platform that really wanted to reinvent the experience of fundraising for social fundraisers and peer-to-peer, customization is key. So the ability for the nonprofit to set up these notifications and to customize these notifications and to turn things on and turn things off in a way that they can go into the back end and do it themselves. Because, you know, every campaign is different. Every nonprofit is different. And so while we have the generational information, you have to be able to go in and tailor that and nuance it. Email notifications, text notifications, you know, badges, milestones, matching gifts, all those things that help to gamify and motivate. So I think the short order is the ability for flexibility and customization for how the nonprofits want to set it up themselves.
So this report's been out for a couple of weeks. So what sort of responses have you gotten? Have you gotten some interesting feedback? Got any pushback on it? Anybody said, that just doesn't fit with me?
I think a lot of people, we haven't gotten pushback, but we've gotten a lot of aha moments of centrality and the importance of an experience. I mean, we've been talking, and I think you and I've talked about it offline, of this idea of gone are the days of transactional fundraising and, you know, and are the days of creating a journey for your donors, or in this case, for your active fundraisers. This takes it another step and says, okay, central to that journey is that you have to create an experience that matters for them. You have to connect them to your cause. You have to have impact statements. You have to engage them throughout your campaign, and you have to make it easy. And I think people have said, I've thought about the experience. I've thought about executing the experience, but I've never actually broken it down and looked at the experience itself.
Did your researchers look at the, I did see some information in here about retention. Are these social fundraisers going back around and coming back and doing this for us again next year?
I mean, they say they will do it again next year. And I think that's what's so important for nonprofits is to think about, they've said they'll do it. So how do I actually make sure that experience makes them want to do it again? And I think one of the things that so jumps out at me in the findings is, you know, that they're habitual. These peer-to-peer fundraisers, they're telling us 85% said they fundraise at least once a year. Now, that doesn't mean they fundraise at least once a year for the same cause, but 85% people rarely say anything, but they're telling us that they're habitual. They do it at least once a year. 41% of them fundraise on behalf of a nonprofit more than once a year. So this is something they enjoy doing, they want to do. And they literally said, and we saw this over and over and over again in the survey, I do it. It's something I do every year. So, you know, they're there. They're ready. They're in that mindset of wanting to do this again. The question becomes how, and we have to challenge ourselves as nonprofits. Are we creating that experience that is, one, enjoyable, and two, differentiates us from all the different causes that they could directly fundraise for?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that kind of loops us back to the experience of it being fun and enjoyable. It's not so much that you have to have a birthday party for them every time. It's more of just, can I enjoy, right? You don't have to create literally a party and drop balloons from the ceiling for these people, but you do have to make what it is they're doing for you, whether they're sitting on a bus and pushing buttons on their iPhone to make this thing continue to go on or or whatever they're doing, they do have to enjoy it. Am I right?
Absolutely. They have to derive some sense of enjoyment from it. They have to know that what they're doing matters. And you have to be able to communicate what it is that their fundraising is allowing your mission to do. Pretty simple things, but oftentimes I would say, ask ourselves, are we really truly faithfully doing those three things? And start there. I think, you know, when you talk about the fun, I love this group out of Austin, Texas, Well Aware. I've seen them grow their fundraising hundreds of percent over the last few years with a quirky and really fun campaign. Now, I'm not by any means saying that everybody needs to do this because it won't work for some donor demographics, but let me break down how they make it fun.
Sure.
So they do something called shower strike.
Okay.
So basically you decide you're not going to shower until you hit your fundraising goal for them. They take the water and, you know, obviously they're really dovetailing in with their larger mission, which is to build water wells in Africa.
Okay.
But cool. Their fundraisers, they withhold shower until they reach their goal, and they do fun things with it. And it's this fun experience. Now, not showering is not going to work for every cause, but how do you create the experience of something that's not really fun, not showering for a week or so? And how do you turn it into something that's viral, that's catchy, that's, you know, full of engagement? They've got classrooms not showering. They've got adults not showering. They have boomers not showering. I mean, they have really created an experience that has become fun first and then successful fundraising second.
Well, they've embodied the experience of what it means to be without water. Mm-hmm. So there's a very deep, compelling side of that too. I mean, it's not just, it's not just dropping balloons from the ceiling and having fun with your friends. It's actually feeling like you've derived something that now you can tell people about and tell a story. And then when the money's raised, you feel like some part of you has been sort of shaped and formed. I mean, we talk about that sort of stuff, We're a faithful family, I guess. I would talk about that sort of stuff with my minister. That's pretty profound stuff. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you unpack that with social fundraisers. I mean, you look at our data, and it says, 72% of them, regardless of what type of fundraiser they do or their generation, say that they care about the mission of the organization why they fundraise. Or the second reason is the money would make a difference. And so you take to your statement about Well Aware and that they've really made it powerful because you understand what it's like to be without water. They also do a great job of impact statements. For $50, here's what your gift means in water. If for $25, here's what your gift means in water. And truly connecting that back to how you make a difference.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Kelly, we have had your attention and our audience's attention for about 25 minutes, and we start to lose our audience at about that point.
Yep.
So before I let you go,
wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up, but let's remind everyone the name of the study. We're going to put links in my show notes. If they can't get to my show notes for whatever reason, and I'll make sure to do everything we can so that they can, where else can they find it? Tell everybody what you want them to know so that they find exactly what you want them to have.
Absolutely. So the study is produced by One Cause. It's called the Social Fundraiser Research Study. You can do a couple things to get the information easily. You can literally type social fundraiser study into Google, and it should come up in the first one or three spots. You can go to www.onecause.com and go to our homepage and just scroll down. The study's right there, about three quarters of the way down to the page. And so you can also go to our website and check out our webinars. We have a couple webinars out there that break down these findings live. So you can kind of listen to it. If you're an audio processor and not a reader, go to our webinar section.
Okay, great. Yeah, we're going to get this on there. It has been a pleasure. I look forward to continuing to work with you and our friends at One Cause. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to kick it off with you today.
Absolutely. Have a great day, Jason. Have a great day, everybody out there.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.